Hi. Well, hello. Greetings, Guten Tag. What a surprise to see you here. I have a feed drop for you, which means it's a different kind of ad. It's called Dirt Cheap. And it's a new podcast from Neon Hum Media that digs deeply into the dollar bins of used bookstores and your grandmother's storage unit in search of pulp, in search of sass, in search of questionable grammar. Guided by hosts Amanda Meadows and Jeffrey Golden, each season will explore a forgotten and discarded pulp novel culled from the dustbin of literary history, reenacting its pages through narration and sound design, stopping and starting to respond and bring its oddity and hilarity occasionally into relief. You don't need to read the full book to listen, because hosts Amanda and Jeffrey will guide you chapter by chapter, extracting excerpts and providing their own comedic commentary and storytelling styles. I love this alliteration. In season one, they read the book Murder in the Glass Room, an L.A. noir novel that almost became a blockbuster film. Set in Los Angeles in the 1940s, it's a funny, surprising, and very dated tale about a murder starring Phil, a petulant bookie who's obsessed with following that murder and also really into interior design. Phil's not a real detective, but he starts to act like one when his wife is murdered and he's the primary suspect. Here is a clip from the show Dirt Cheap.
It gave me no pleasure at all to see this crowd, so I went off to the other side of the house to find Edna. Although the place was colonial in every respect, there was one thing that threw everything out of kilter. It had been Edna's idea, not mine, and although I had fought with her for 2 days over it, she had won. One side of the entrance hall was blocked off by a wall of glass brick with a thick door of plate glass centered in it. It made that part of the house look like a fancy real estate agent's office. As I crossed over to it, I saw Edna. That is, I saw her figure behind the glass brick. I couldn't have been mistaken. Not after 2 years of married life. Not after looking at her for 2 years in evening gowns, in bathing suits, and in panties and a bra. I want
to
say
there's a lot of bragging for someone who claims to have fucked his wife.
But it's also like weird bragging. It's like what a child would say. It's like, oh yeah.
I've even seen her panties.
Yeah, Cindy McClellan. Yeah, I've seen her in her bra and panties.
Mm-hmm. But you bet she had one.
And I've seen it multiple times
with my own peepers right here. I also want to just flag, he spent way too long discussing the glass
glass brick
with the plate glass in the middle. It's
this,
like,
is what he loves. He should have lived now and been the host of Extreme Home Makeover.
Yeah, he would have his own franchise on HGTV.
There she was behind the glass brick arguing with someone. I didn't recognize the other figure. All I knew was that it was a very tall, very skinny man, and that he was terribly mad about something, because his arms flailed around like a windmill. The man looked as if he was screaming, and I could see Edna vigorously shaking her head. Then it happened. He raised his arm and slammed his hand hard across Edna's face. I took a step towards the door. After all, Edna was still my wife, legally. And then I remembered that I didn't care a hoot. I walked slowly into the living room. Cool guy, right?
Oh my god.
Lets his wife be slapped by some dude, doesn't say anything, doesn't interfere on her behalf, doesn't help. It's kind of, yeah, pretty dark.
That's like intense. So like, he doesn't leave the party either.
No, he goes to the living room.
Yeah.
He's going to keep hanging out.
Only until it was clear that his wife wasn't safe in her own house was he comfortable in it.
That's what this home needed. Also, maybe could have used some horse paintings. Maybe we should have gotten a horse painting and my wife getting slapped. Those are the two things that really make a home feel like a home to me. Yeah, no. Yeah, really, really shitty dude. I mean, even if you don't like somebody, I mean, even if you don't like your wife, even if you're thinking about separating or things aren't going well, I mean, you still would say or do something. By the way, we were talking about this crowd. Phil does not like this crowd.
Right.
What kind of crowd do you think Phil does like?
I'm worried that he doesn't have friends.
I don't think he's got any friends. Maybe he
has professional entanglements.
Oh, yeah, a ton of those.
Yeah, a lot of those.
Yeah, I would guess like Like, at best, maybe there's a bar he goes to where people tolerate him, where he's like a bar fly, where people are like, oh, God, Phil's here. Well, hey, Phil.
Right. It's like the bar where all of the worst dudes hang out. So it's just kind of par for the course.
A couple of the regulars who remembered me said hello, but most of the guests were strangers. At the bar, I poured myself a double with lots of ice and very little soda and sat down in a sofa in the corner to wait. A pasty-faced young man flopped down beside me and said, "Stinking party, isn't it? Nothing but a bunch of social butterflies. They spin not, neither do they toil. You know what I mean? Here the world is falling into ruin, and all they do is pass their time away." I didn't answer. He pulled himself up off the sofa. "Oh, an introvert," he said pugnaciously. "I don't like introverts. All they do is sit and think. They..." He stopped suddenly, staring at my chest. "Forgive me, sir," he said. "I had you all wrong. You can never tell a book by its cover." And he wandered away. Unconsciously, I rubbed my hand across my chest. I felt a sharp pinprick. Then I remembered the paper flower. I removed it and saw the words, "Veterans United," stamped on the white tag attached to the stem. I dropped it into an ashtray. Yeah, he really hates veterans.
Yeah, this is like pretty amazing. He's definitely got something. Yeah. Some kind of animosity.
Also, this guy's a real character. This guy who, "Stinking party, isn't it? Nothing but a bunch of social butterflies."
Yeah, I'm confused about that. Was he being ironic? Like, was he?
No, I think nobody in the 40s is ironic. That's, I think, yet.
Yeah,
I don't
you're
think
right.
They
hadn't
it
discovered it yet.
I think he's a guy who's like overcompensating. He's like, "What a bunch of losers, am I right? We're not losers. We love to talk. We're two talky guys talking to each other."
Yeah, this is super weird.
He's a super weird
guy.
Yeah,
these two men are clearly oil and water.
Off on the other side of the room, a bald composer who worked at one of the studios started to pick out some chords on the piano. A tall girl, whose dress was too tight in the rear, leaned over and started to sing. Nobody thought of turning off the radio, and nobody seemed to mind. I was working on my second double when Edna came into the room with a very tall, bony man. They were arm in arm, and they laughed and chattered to each other like the best of friends. He was about 10 years older than I, about 42 or 3, I should say. He was over 6'2", but there was no flesh on his bones. From across the room, he looked healthily tanned. But when he got closer to me, I could see that the color was really caused by innumerable tiny purple veins that gathered themselves into solid splotches on his cheeks. A funny thing was that the part of his head above the eyebrows didn't quite go with the rest of his face. The skull flared out broadly and topped with a mass of thick, iron-gray hair piled back into a great dry pompadour. So, first of all, I just want to say, he notices everybody's eyebrows. This is an guy for sure.
Brows man.
He's a brows man.
Big time brows man.
Big time brows man.
I think it's fascinating. This is one thing where I don't know if he's totally far off, because I am an eyebrow aficionado.
That's true. I have big brows. I'm a big brow guy.
Yeah, I'm a fan of big bushy brows. This is no surprise here.
But when you go look at somebody's face, is that eyebrow like one of the first key things, as opposed to like, because common people say, you know, what do I look at when I look at somebody? It's like eyes would be like a common thing.
Yeah, if I'm looking at someone's eyes, inevitably I'm looking at their brows. So it's never like a thing where I'm like consciously clocking it.
Right.
But I'm definitely like making a note of, ooh, I wonder if this is penciled in. I wonder if this has been threaded. Like, there's like a weird background program in my brain that takes pleasure in guessing how someone is grooming their eyebrows.
You can subscribe and follow the story to Solve the Mystery Dirt Cheap Season 1 now. To listen to the show, just search for Dirt Cheap in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I will see you again soon. Thank you.